The Rays Radio Network proudly presents This Week in Rays Baseball.
Drilled to center field and deep. Back on it is Eaton. To the track. To the wall. It's gone! Evan Longoria with a two-run home run to straightaway center. And he gives the Rays a 6-4 lead here in the ninth.
Coming up, we'll recap the action from this past week, take a look around Major League Baseball, and sit down for in-depth interviews with the biggest names in the game.
1-2. Got a pitch. Got him swinging, and the ball game is over as Jake McGee strikes out the side in the ninth inning.
Here's your host, Neil Solons.
Good morning. Today from the Rays Radio Studio across from Gate 1, welcome to our show on this Sunday as the Rays get set to wrap up a series with Baltimore. On our program, we'll chat with Kevin Kiermaier about being named the Rays Heart and Hustle Award winner for a second straight year. We'll also talk with Brian Anderson of Sun Sports, Durham manager Jared Sandberg, plus Mike Farron of SiriusXM, and much, much more. We start, though, with highlights from the week gone by. Now, Sunday, the Rays had a chance to win a series out of the break against the Blue Jays in Toronto. Chris Archer was good, and this was all Toronto got against him.
0-1, the count to Colabello. It's a swing and a drive to deep left field. Back goes to Jesus, looking up. It's gone. Home run. Chris Colabello, who looked so bad at the plate his first time up, now runs into one. A line drive homer, and the Blue Jays lead 2-0.
Those are the only runs Archer allowed over seven solid innings. Marco Estrada was even better, though, as Toronto won the series, beating the Rays 4-0. The Blue Jays scored all of their runs via the home run. Monday, the Rays went to Philadelphia and opened a series against the Phillies. Tampa Bay took a 2-0 lead in the second, but the Phillies answered right back against Matt Moore.
So he works from the line, and the first pitch to Cesar Hernandez is ripped down the left field line. That's going to give the Phillies the lead. Scoring is rough around third. Herrera, he will score as well, stopping at third. Is Buchanan, as it's an RBI double, a two RBI double for Cesar Hernandez, and it's 3-2 Philadelphia. It's the fifth lead that Matt Moore has not been able to hold so far this season.
Phillies scored all of their runs with two out. The Rays dropped a 5-3 game one decision to the Phillies. Tuesday, the Rays found an answer. Nathan Carnes battled the heat to go five innings and did a little bit more than that.
Here's Nathan Carnes in a swing and a high fly ball left field and deep. As she going back to the track, to the wall, it's gone! Rays pitcher Nathan Carnes takes the first pitch he sees here in the third, and he hits it out, and he gives the Rays a 1-0 lead.
And that was the only one of the ballgame. For the first time in interleague history, the American League team won 1-0 on a pitcher's homer, courtesy of Nathan Carnes. Wednesday, the Rays had a chance to win a series. While they had 13 hits, they struggled to find the big one, and the Phillies eventually got the big hit in 1-10.
And the pitch looped in the air. Left center, Kiermaier on the run, dives and he can't get it. It gets by him and goes to the wall. Odubel Herrera has won it for the Phillies. As Dominic Brown scores, the Phillies have won the series today by the final of 5-4 in 10 innings.
The Rays ended the road trip 2-4, fell to 48-49 on the season, entering an off day Thursday. Now Friday, the Rays returned to action at home against the Baltimore Orioles. Both clubs were struggling entering play. This was a pitcher's duel that eventually was decided by the bullpen. Down 1-0 in the eighth, the Rays rallied for three with two out to take the lead.
O'Day ready to pitch. Swing and a ground ball back to the middle for a base hit. That'll score a couple. Jaso scores. Here comes Longoria. He will score as well. It's a two-run single as the throw goes to third. Loney is out, but the Rays take the lead on a Tim Beckham two-run single here in the eighth inning.
Jake McGee finished up for the save. The Rays made it four straight home wins and got back to 500 with a 3-1 victory. And then yesterday, Baltimore had an answer, and it came with one swing.
Now the payoff pitch. There's a high, deep drive to right field. This one's on its way, and it's a grand slam for Chris Davis, 4-0 Baltimore.
And that one swing led Baltimore to win 5-1, setting up today's rubber game of that series. Hey, today is Christmas in July, and the Rays are celebrating, hosting the Orioles. Kids 14 and under get a Rays surprise Christmas present. Again, come out to the ballpark and raise up. You're listening to This Week in Rays Baseball. Coming up, what does the Heart and Hustle Award mean to Kevin Kiermaier? Find out right after this on the Rays Baseball Network. We continue on This Week in Rays Baseball, and our guest this week is the Heart and Hustle winner for the Rays for the second straight year. That's Kevin Kiermaier. Kevin, first of all, thanks for joining us, and congratulations.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
What does it mean to win that award? And when you hear the words heart and hustle, what immediately comes to mind to you?
I think just respecting the game and playing the game the right way. And that's something I take a lot of pride in. And when I received this award last year, my rookie year, and for me to be nominated for it, it meant a lot to me because I've been playing this game this way my whole life, you know, giving 100% effort each and every day. And like I said, that's something I take a lot of pride in, finally get recognition for how hard you play and playing the game the right way. Having an award for it is a really cool thing. And I'm glad to be nominated for this award, and hopefully for many more years to come. It means a lot to me. And like I said, I just try to play the game the right way and respect it. And I think people around baseball, past and present, really appreciate the way I go about my business, and that means a lot to me.
What would it mean to win the award on a national level?
It would be, you know, awesome. You know, being that one player in all of MLB to win it would be a very special thing. And like I said, you know, I always say you can't control the results each and every day coming to the field, but you control your effort level. And I always say, whenever you see someone play harder than me, you let me know. And, you know, I'm going to do my best to, you know, I'm not doing any of this for, you know, people to, you know, fake hustle or anything like that. This is the way I've been my whole life, and I wish we had video of me in high school and junior college. I've always, you know, run hard to first base and even on a walk, certain things like that. And I always tell people, you know, I'm getting my legs loose because I want to steal this base or I want to score on a double. And I think a lot of people think I'm just saying that to say it, but I really do mean it. And like I said, who knows, maybe younger kids will emulate my game and say they want to play like me. And you know, I never had anyone growing up who I emulated my game by, but I remember growing up a Cubs fan, I watched Sammy Sosa run from their dugout before the game started. And when they say the Cubs are taking the field now to start the game, Sammy Sosa would sprint from the dugout all the way to right field and, you know, salute the fans out there. And I thought that was the coolest thing ever. So anytime, you know, I can present my speed or just, you know, really put my effort level there, I'm going to do it, and it's something hopefully I can do for many more years to come.
You mentioned you didn't have someone per se that you emulated, but, I mean, what you saw from Sammy epitomized some heart and some hustle in that regard. Is there any player now that you enjoy watching on the other end because of how hard they play or the way they play, or as you came up through the minors?
Oh, man, there's a handful of guys who – you know, we play all these opposing players, and you don't want to see them do anything to beat you. But there's guys like Jacoby Ellsbury, Brett Gardner. Those are the two guys that stand out, and Dustin Pedroia too. And like I said, you hate when these guys sit here and do great things against you. But at the same time, you have to take a step back and respect the way they play and how they go about their business. And, you know, I have to say those are the guys that stick out to me. And like I said, I'm not going to emulate my game by them anyway. We're all our own individual players, and we all can do different things out there. But, you know, I kind of compare myself to other guys who kind of have the same tool set as me. And, you know, those guys stick out to me, and I respect the way they play and go about their business. It's pretty impressive.
Kevin Kiermaier with us on This Week in Rays Baseball. And, Kevin, you know, we're talking about the Heart and Hustle Award, and you know, you've got family members that epitomize heart and hustle. You've got a brother who is a groundskeeper, and you've got another brother who's a linebacker, senior, now going to be at the NAIA level in football. Would you say you are more likely to have been or more like a football player or more like a guy who gets dirty who would be on the ground side?
Well, to be honest, I talked to my older brother, Dan, who works for the Chicago Cubs, and you know, you think it's just going out there and raking and, you know, tamping some mounds, certain things like that. But he uses some pretty big words on me. And you know, he got a degree in what he does and in turf science. And I think it's a lot more complicated than a lot of people think. And I respect how much pride he takes into his work. And me, I played football in high school. And I think that's a little more of my speed rather than, you know, taking care of stuff. I don't think I would be qualified to do that. So. And I love football. I love contact and hitting guys and not getting in trouble for it. So, you know, I'd say I'm more of a football player than a grounds crew, if that if that's what we're going for.
When you get to go to Chicago on the next road trip, will you get to spend some time with him? I know you're playing the White Sox, and obviously he's working for the Cubs. Have you checked the schedule out?
I haven't seen if the Cubs are going to be home or not, but, I mean, he'll be there regardless, and, we're going to see each other a couple times. But the big factor will be if, Cubs are on the road, then he'll be able to come to all the games, and we'll be able to hang out a lot more rather than, if the Cubs are at home, he's going to be busy, and, we'll find a way to see each other, but, time might be limited. But I haven't checked the schedule, so I really don't know what to expect going forward, but I will see him, though.
I'm sure he's proud of you and what you've accomplished, but how proud are you of him to be able to get to the big league level as a groundskeeper, as your big brother?
It's awesome. He has worked his butt off his whole life, and he's paid his dues. He's worked through multiple minor league teams, and the pay was never good, and he was working 80 some hours a week, and kind of making close to minimum wage, and it really beat me up inside, because he worked so hard, and I just feel like he never got recognized for all his hard work, and for now, for him to finally be in the city that he's always wanted to be in. We grew up Cub fans, and for him to work at Wrigley Field, and Cubs giving him an opportunity, and I talked to him, and this is the happiest he's ever been with his life, and I'm so proud of him, and it's kind of cool to say that there's never thought there'd be two Kiermaiers in the big leagues, let alone I didn't know I was going to be in the big leagues, but now that I'm here and he's up in the big leagues as well, is a really cool thing for us. And he's around all these big guys each and every day, and they treat him great, so I couldn't be happier for him.
Again, we're chatting with Kevin Kiermaier on This Week in Rays Baseball, and before you get to see your brother, you're going to be involved in a community activity locally here, the Water Smart from the Start program. As a spokesperson for that, and Ben did it last year, what does it mean to be involved with that? And as a kid, how important was that to you to learn how to swim and be able to take care of yourself in the water?
First and foremost, as baseball players, it's it's a privilege to do certain thing like this. And, kids look up to you, and it's always – we got to do our part in the community. We can't just come in the field each and every day. We do a lot of stuff off the field, and, a lot of guys really enjoy doing stuff like that, and it's always about giving back. And, I always told myself, when I have the, opportunity to do something like this, I'm going to take it by storm and make the best of it. And, I was always in the pool each and every day when I was younger, and swimming and, learn how to do it the right way is very important, especially here in Florida. I know it's the number one in drowning in all the U.S. because all the water that's around. So for me to be the face of this means a lot to me. The Rays came at me, and I was very excited about it. And, for me to sit here and give instructions to kids and let them learn the proper way to be smart in the water and be safe out there. And it's great for the body, and it's just a fun thing to do as a kid. So for me to have this opportunity to give back in this way, it means a lot to me, and I'm very excited moving forward with YMCA and doing this.
And I think the YMCA is happy, and certainly the Rays are happy you're involved too. And it's not only swimming that you enjoy, but you enjoy fishing a lot. How much do you do that too to help relax when you're away from the field? Because you do need some other outlets when you're not playing.
Yeah, and the thing with me, I love fishing. I absolutely love it. But during the season here, as I've been up in Tampa, I have not done it hardly at all, to be honest. In the minor leagues, I did a lot. When I played in Port Charlotte in 2012, I actually lived on the water there, and I could just go out each and every morning, have my coffee, and go fish. But here, and I'm more of a freshwater guy too, but there's not a whole lot of freshwater around downtown Tampa. And, we get so busy with baseball, and, on off days, Foley and other guys are always inviting me. I say, I just want to let my body relax. So once the off season goes, that's the first thing that comes to my mind, though, is fishing. And, hopefully I can, stick around here for a while, where I can maybe purchase a house on a lake around this area where I could really get a lot of fishing in. But, for now, it's just something that, I really enjoy just talking about fishing, and, doing it's one thing, but I enjoy hearing other guys' fishing stories on the team, and it's something that I've always loved and I'll do my whole life.
Do you catch bigger fish than the rest of the guys? I mean, do you guys, biggest catch ever?
No, I do not catch bigger fish than the Foley and Westy are traveling secretary. I've seen pictures of what they call it. It's pretty impressive, but they're in a better surround. They're always going out with guides and everything in Florida, where the fish are eating all year round. Indiana, and I'm not making excuses. It's just our fish. We eat, or they eat, maybe 6 months out of the year, and during the winter, I go ice fishing. You can still catch them. But, generally fish are bigger here in the South. And, that's something I'm very jealous of, because they show me these pictures of 5-7 pound bass and they think nothing of it. And that's a fish of a lifetime in Indiana. It really is. So they got my number when it comes to that. But I'm still 25 years old. I got many years yet to fish and try to top them off.
And many fish stories to come, hopefully. In terms of baseball, you've had some really good moments with the Rays to this point in your short career. What has been your best moment?
Oh, boy. I still think it's dating back to last year, the catch I made against the Cardinals. It was here at home, and bases were loaded, and it was a rough time in the year for us. We weren't getting many wins, and we were up 1-0, and Peter Borges hit a ball in the right center gap, and, I jumped as high as I could and as far as I could and laid out and made a great catch, and the crowd reaction was something I've never experienced like that before, and they were just, going crazy because of the catch I made, and I never had anything like that happen, and it felt so great. And, also my debut in 2013, game 163, that was I think one of two debuts like that ever happened in all of baseball, and, for me to go up there and be in the playoffs that, 2 days later was absolutely amazing to me. And the Rays, activating me, says a lot how much they think of me. And that really meant a lot to me. So, so far in my short career, I've had some really cool moments and hopefully many more to come.
Indeed. And obviously you want to continue to grow as a player. If we're talking 3 to 5 years from now, how do you want people to see you, or how do you want to have improved that people will say, wow, look at what Kevin has done since he started?
No, for me, I want to stay healthy first and foremost. But, 3 or 5 years down the road, I always say, I don't want to be just another player. I want to be a premier player in this league. And, I can play defense and run the bases with anyone. But it's just going to be all about my offensive consistency. I have really good weeks at a time, and I have really bad weeks at a time. So for what I want to do the rest of my career, and like I said, I worked my butt off to try to be as consistent as possible, but this game is so hard, and I want to be a consistent everyday player for many more years to come in the big leagues. And I want people to know, whenever you hear the name Kevin Kiermaier, that when you go watch him, he's going to play with 100% each and every day. And like I said, I want kids to look up to me and play the way I do, because I think it's the way the game should be played. And anytime you can make an impact like that, means a lot for us players. And like I said, I just want to be a consistent player, maybe a household name, and people know who I am around the game. And like I said, it's just all about being consistent and staying healthy out on the field.
Well, best of luck in doing both of those. Obviously, we've enjoyed what you've done so far as a Ray, and hopefully many more years to come.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it very much.
Kevin Kiermaier on This Week in Rays Baseball. We'll come back with Brian Anderson of Sun Sports. You're listening to the Rays Baseball Network. Welcome back to This Week in Rays Baseball. Neil Solon's with you at the Rays Radio Studio across from Gate 1. Now time to take a look at the week on by and also look forward. And joining us from the booth from Sun Sports, Brian Anderson, BA. Thanks again for being with us.
Oh, Neil, anytime, buddy.
Now, Santa Claus is out here for Christmas in July. Did you make sure to wish for something today? Or
a win. A series win. And so that would obviously mean that this team has to come out here and play good baseball. But, yeah, I saw Santa, and I went to tell him Merry Christmas, and he yelled Rays up at me. So, I think he was hoping for a series win too.
Indeed, and I think many of us are. And obviously it would start with Matt Moore. You watch the first few starts that Matt has made coming off Tommy John surgery. What has stood out to you, and for him to be able to turn a corner and start to pitch the way we certainly know he's capable of over the long haul? What are the biggest adjustments he needs to make?
Well, I think I think this is something that has plagued Matt Moore. Whenever we've seen him, struggle, it's the delivery, the repeatable delivery. Can he, go out there and be able to put that together? you know, more than a hitter or two at a time. And he's really struggled with that, you know, since coming back. We've seen glimpses of him put it together where he's able to go through a stretch of three, four, you know, five hitters and look really good and be able to get the fastball into the spots that he wants it. And then at other times, it seems to elude him. And, it, you know, and sometimes it goes from one hitter to the next. And so I think with Matt Moore, repeatable delivery is everything. And once he's able to do that, you'll see him become very effective again, because when he's able to get that fastball to either side of the plate and then, you know, work from out in front of a hitter, then the secondary pitches come into play, the curveball, the changeup, and that's when he is very, very effective. But right now, you know, he hasn't been able to do that, and you just wonder about his confidence level and being able to go out there and believe that he can do that. And that's why I think the key to this afternoon's game is a quick, clean start. You know, even if it's not a clean finish for Matt Moore, it has to be a quick and clean start. If he can go out there the first couple of innings and have some efficient innings and start to instill that belief, you know, in the guys on the bench and the guys out behind him in the field that, hey, listen, he's got it today, kind of, you know, raise the spirits of this team, and hopefully they can come away with a win. But I think that that will absolutely be the key, and obviously that's something that we're going to find out very soon after the game starts.
B.A., you started with delivery and then moved to the mental side. Do you think his issues are more mental than physical right now?
You know what? I think they go hand in hand. I think that there are some physical issues. I think at times you can see Matt Moore on his delivery to home plate, how it will change. You know, one time he's kind of standing straight up at the delivery. Other times he's more bent over and here comes the leg. Sometimes the leg sweeps. I mean, you see three or four different versions, you know, on the same pitch, the fastball. And so I think there are some physical issues, and I think what ends up happening is when, you know, listen, you've pitched for a long time. You've been out there. You know that hitting your spots is very important in order to have success. So when you're not able to consistently do that, whether it's physical or not, it will take a mental toll. And so I think that's exactly that's what's happened to Matt right now, is physically he's not where he wants to be as far as being able to be robotic, you know, and repeat that delivery time and time again. And that will then lead to mental, you know, the mental part of it, where you start to doubt if you're able to do that. I don't know if he's there or not. Only Matt Moore can speak to that, but I know that that will ultimately be the byproduct if the physical is not figured out.
Again, we're chatting with Brian Anderson of Sun Sports on This Week in Rays Baseball. And, B.A., one thing I know you can speak to from your experience as a player is what it's like to go through this week. We're right near the trading deadline. It's 5 days from now. How challenging is this stretch for a player, not knowing, not only for yourself personally, if you're in the rumor mill, but also based on how your team is going to be 5 days from now?
You know what? I think that you learn in this game, not even, you know, at the trading deadline, but in the off season, getting drafted, the whole process. You know, am I going to move up a level next year from AA to AAA or from AAA to the big leagues? Am I going to get an opportunity? You know, so many different factors come into play in this game that you really, it teaches you to focus on the task at hand. And if you don't have any control over the situation, well, then you're just, it's wasted energy in worrying about it. It's hard not to. It's hard when you're being asked the question, do you think you'll be here next week? Because at that point, you obviously have to deal with it, face it, answer the question, and all of a sudden that little seed is implanted into your mind. But at the end of the day, you can't control that stuff. And so, you know, I think that through all the years of moving through professional baseball, you just learn to, what can I control? I can control my performance, my preparation, my readiness. That's what I'm going to do. If I have to answer some questions, I'm going to answer them, and then I'm going to get right back to work and let the chips fall where they may. Because as many times as you hear your name bandied about as potential trade bait, it oftentimes doesn't happen. So, you know, you really just have to narrow it down on what can I control, and you focus on that as much as you can.
You kind of find it odd that, you know, here we're talking about that, and David Price made his last start for the Rays last year here, and he may make his last start for the Tigers here a year later. He's scheduled to start this coming week against the Rays.
Yeah, very strange, because, you know, this is one of those situations where David Price going to Detroit, that was going to be a team that was going to be, you know, right at the top of the Central Division and looking to get back to a World Series for Mike Ilitch, you know, trying to do anything he can to get that World Series trophy, and it just has not worked out for him. So then all of a sudden you hear his name, you know, as far as a trade potential. And, you know, he's gone through this before. And it would be strange, though, if he did make that start here and then all of a sudden, you know, he was no longer a Tiger. This would, you know, beware of coming back to Tropicana Field, I guess, if you're David Price.
Indeed. We'll make for an interesting week for sure. Hopefully it starts with a win today. B.A., thanks for a few minutes and enjoy the broadcast.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Neil. Appreciate it.
That's Brian Anderson of Sun Sports. You're listening to This Week in Rays Baseball. Before our next guest, let's pause for station identification. You're listening to the Rays Baseball Network.
This is Tampa Bay Sports Radio, 620 WDAE St. Petersburg and 95.3 FM.
Neil Solon's with you at the Rays Radio Studio across from Gate 1. And time now to look at the Rays minor league system on This Week in Rays Baseball. And joining us from Norfolk, Virginia, a guy who's told many people they're going to the big leagues this year. He's in his first year managing the AAA Durham Bulls. That's Jared Sandberg. Jared, thanks very much for being with us.
Hey, Neil. Thanks for having me.
First, I know for you, you've probably called up a lot more people than expected because of all the injuries and the moves. In fact, Durham's on a pace to set a record for transactions. How has it been your first year in AAA? How much more challenging has it been because of all the injuries here?
Yeah, it's been challenging, but we've had a lot of fun. And, you know, early in the season with the injuries at the big league level and, you know, them having to, you know, tap into the Durham Bulls roster, you know, it was exciting for me to call in players and let them know they're going to the big leagues for the first time. You know, I had, you know, guys cry. I had guys laugh. I had guys think I was joking. I shared a beer with a guy. It was all kinds of different emotions go through the players' minds when they're going to the big leagues for the first time.
Are there any specifically that really stand out to you that are really going to stick with you?
Yeah, I mean, Alan Dykstra was very emotional when he got the call. He couldn't believe it. Ryan Brett, wide-eyed, you know, wasn't having necessarily the greatest of starts, and when he was called up, and you know, for Ryan Brett, he's from the Pacific Northwest, and so when I called him in the office, I sat him down and I asked him how he was playing. He goes, I'm pretty frustrated. I don't feel like I'm playing all that well. And I said, well, where are you playing tomorrow? He goes, I think I'm playing second base here. And I said, no, you're going to be playing in Tropicana Field. So I tried to play some, you know, make it memorable for some of these guys, but, you know, guys like Ryan Brett, you know, some of these guys were shocked.
And Ryan actually had a good game last night. How is he coming along? Because he had that shoulder injury after he came here, and I'm sure it couldn't help with his timing all the time that he missed, and he's a guy I know the Rays are high on from an offensive standpoint.
Yeah, we're really high on him, and I think the injury definitely slowed the season down a little bit for him, but he's gained some confidence in the shoulder, knowing that, you know, it's getting stronger and he can go out there and just play like he's always played, and as he's gained the confidence, the timing and the skills are starting to come back.
Jared Sandberg with us on This Week in Rays Baseball, manager for the AAA Durham Bulls. Certainly from a fan perspective, I get a lot of calls and questions during the course of the postgame show about one Richie Schaefer, who's having certainly a remarkable year. He's played in the Futures game. He leads the organization in home runs. You came to the big leagues as a third baseman. What can you tell me about Richie, and where does he still need to grow before he gets his first big league opportunity?
I'll tell you what, he's put on an impressive display of power at the plate since he's come up here to AAA. I mean, his first game, he hit the three homers and the two homers at Scranton. I mean, he hit one ball off the top of the wall. He's hit changeups, he's hit breaking balls. He's put on an impressive display of power, and he's managed the strike zone better than I actually thought he was going to. You know, he's got the 23 walks and the 55 strikeouts, but I think for him, when Richie is under control and doesn't overswing, doesn't try and hit the ball far, he's really, really good. When he tries to hit the ball hard and, you know, looking for solid contact, he's going to hit the homers. You know, he's starting to overswing a little bit, like the last couple of days, and the swing and miss starts to get into his game, but you know, as long as he manages the strike zone and puts the ball in play, good, really, really good things happen for Richie. And, you know, defensively, he's played pretty solid third base, and he's even moved over to first base, and he's been fine over there. And again, I know he played there in college, so getting that experience at first base is going to help. And there's also a possibility of him playing right field here in August for the Durham Bulls.
It certainly would make sense to make him as versatile as possible, especially with Loney and Longoria at the corners right now. Again, we're chatting with Jared Sandberg. You also got to watch the other night the first start at AAA for a guy that you had in high A in Blake Snell. He's had a remarkable year. He leads the minors in ERA. What was his first AAA start like to you?
It was really good. You know, he gave up the one run. It was on a solo homer, a two-strike elevated fastball up out over the plate to a nine-hole right-handed hitter, and the kid put a good swing on it and hit it out of the park. But other than that, man, Blake showed tremendous stuff. Good fastball. He was down the zone, good angle, and he was also able to elevate when he needed to. The curveball was solid. His slider and changeup, just like I remember it, both swing and miss pitches. And the one thing I was pleased with was his maturity on the mound. You know, he was out there, couldn't put a lot of pressure on himself in his first Triple-A start. And, you know, he was able to control his emotions pretty much after that first at-bat when he got the strikeout. But he did a fantastic job for his four innings. He left after his last inning. It was second and third with one out. And Kyle Snyder, the pitching coach, went out there and tried to settle him down, and Blake didn't need it. He goes, I'll take care of this. I got this, and struck out the next two guys. But he showed improved maturity both on and off the field, and he's put together a tremendous season and looking forward to his next start.
One guy who's been with you for pretty much all season is Taylor Motter. He's not a non-roster guy, but he's had a tremendous season, 40-plus extra base hits, more than 20 steals. What has stood out about Taylor this year?
Man, he's had an incredible season, and he's fun to watch. I actually wrote him down as Baseball America's, you know, most exciting player in the league. He can change games with his arm in the outfield or the infield. He can change games with his speed on the bases. He can definitely change the game with his bat. And he's put together a great season for us. After he got to a pretty slow start, too, I think it was his first 50 at-bats here in AAA. He was trying to make adjustments and wasn't doing all that well, and turned it around and had a great season. He's hitting for some power, drives the ball in the gap, and gives you a good at-bat, and he's been a staple in that three-hole for us. And I don't think, you know, it's really shocked anybody that he's come here and put together a solid season. You know, he had the 16 homers last year in Double-A, and whether it's flying under the radar or whatever it is, you know, he's a guy with solid skill, and in my opinion, he's going to be a good big leaguer when he gets the opportunity. The other thing too is, you know, he can play all three outfield positions. He played third, short, and second for us. So for him to have that versatility of playing all over the diamond is pretty special.
Jared, great stuff. Good luck today against the Norfolk Tides, and we hope to talk to you again soon.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me, Neil.
Again, that's Jared Sandberg. When we continue on This Week in Rays Baseball, hear more about the Rays' new Honor Pass program from the team president. That and more after this on the Rays Baseball Network. We continue on This Week in Rays Baseball, and joining us right now is Rays team president Brian Ald. Brian, this was the first set of home games where the Rays Honor Pass program was in effect. Let us know a little bit about how all of this started, and for fans who may be listening and aren't aware yet of what the Honor Pass program is, what it is.
Well, during the course of our Rays Up for Heroes endeavor, we really came to realize that our veterans are sometimes underappreciated, and we thought to ourselves, what can we do that would really be pretty special? And we had the ability to say, why don't we just give veterans tickets, two tickets to every game that they want to come to for the remainder of the year? And so we set about trying to figure out whether or not that was actually possible, and do some great work by our ticket sales staff and some great leadership from Stuart Sternberg, frankly. We were able to put this program together, and I think we've got over 1,000 veterans in the house tonight on the first night. We've got over 7,000 veterans who have already signed up for an honor pass, and I think this is only just now beginning to catch steam.
Obviously, the feedback initially has to be good if you're getting that kind of response to it. Who are some of the people in the Tampa Bay community that you worked with just to get feedback and ideas as to how to put it all together?
Well, we asked our friends at the county commissions, Commissioner Merman over in Hillsborough, Commissioner Maroney in Pinellas County, and they set us up with a number of veterans groups, five different groups, and we asked them, you know, what's the best way to go about doing this? How can we make this simple for our veterans so that it's not a difficult task for them to get an honor pass, and so we can make sure that we get them out to our ball games and that they can have a great time? And we were able to do that.
Who are some of the individuals within the front office
that helped make this possible? Because I'm sure there was a lot of work that happened technically to make this happen and also to get feedback from the military community.
Sure, I don't want to miss anyone, but Brian Richardson, the head of our ticket sales department, played a key role. Dick Crippen, who leads all of our military outreach, was incredibly important. Rafaela Amador helped us with a lot of the PR, and Melanie Lenz as well, our senior vice president. They all worked together, along with Jimmy Reed, who really took a lot of the details under his own wings. He's one of our salesmen and really made sure that he had some direct feedback about how people were signing up, how they could use the web, how they could do it at the box office.
And how hard was it? I mean, it sounds like it was a fair amount of undertaking. It took a good amount of time.
Well, we have a great partner in ID.me that allows us to identify veterans easy. We have great veterans affairs groups in the local market who are able to identify them veterans for us as well. And we've been able to do it pretty quickly. We turned this around in a few weeks from idea generation to execution. I'm not suggesting there won't be some kinks to work out in the next couple weeks as we start having people start redeeming these things. But, yeah, it's been a pretty big success. We're really proud of it. And when you're working for something like this, you don't mind putting in a few extra hours.
Have you guys heard from a lot of other professional sports teams? Because it is unique for a sports team to do something like this.
We've heard a lot from veterans, and they've said that they haven't seen anything like this and that they know of no other team that does anything like this, and of that we're very proud. We haven't spoken directly with a lot of other teams yet, but I can imagine that the next owners meeting, both Stu and I will field a lot of questions about how we did this and how we were able to pull it off, and hopefully maybe we can spread this throughout the league.
And in terms of those individuals, you said you heard from a lot of veterans. Are there any stories or any interesting tidbits to kind of relate about something that you heard back or feedback that obviously was positive?
There's been just a remarkable amount of appreciation, and we're very grateful for that. But of course, we're the ones that should be thankful to our veterans. And we, you know, with every honor pass that we redeem, we thank the veterans for their service, and we say it explicitly, and we think that's really important. I would say maybe the most touching story I've heard so far was of an older woman who was just so proud that she would be able to take her grandkids to games on her veteran status, and that this was going to give her one extra thing for her to be able to do for her grandkids in her later years that she wasn't sure she'd ever be able to do, and that really touched me.
And I guess, you know, this is what the Rays are about, is making memories and being able to touch people in different ways and different generations.
Absolutely. Our mission is to energize the community through the magic of Rays baseball. The Honor Pass is just the latest way that we're doing it, and we couldn't be happier about how we're doing. And we're succeeding in our mission. This community is energized. This community is excited about baseball, and we make magic happen every day.
And you mentioned this is through the Heroes program, all part of the Rays Up for community. What are some of the other key points that we want to make sure our fans are aware of that are coming up?
Well, you know, obviously we're really happy about the program. Our next big event will be to raise up for education, and school's back, and we want to honor a lot of our teachers, a lot of our great educators, a lot of the administrators who work extraordinarily hard, often with not nearly enough thanks. And I'm a former educator myself, so I know about the work that goes into it. I know about the passion that these people have for educating. And I know that a little appreciation goes a long way for those folks. So we're really looking forward to making some memories there as well.
For people who want to learn more about the Honor Pass program specifically, where can they do it? And how easy is it for our veterans to get that Honor Pass again?
RaysBaseball.com/Honor Pass lays it all out. It's pretty simple. It explains all the ways that you can get it. You can sign up right there. And please, veterans, we want to have you out here. Come to a ball game. Enjoy it. We're honored to be able to provide the service.
And that's Rays President Brian Ault on the new Honor Pass program, which again is being used for the first time this weekend at Tropicana Field. Now today, four players are inducted into the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown: John Smoltz, Pedro Martinez, Randy Johnson, and Craig Biggio. Now Biggio finished his playing career when Jim Hickey was Houston's pitching coach. And I asked the Rays pitching coach now about his memories of being on the staff with a then future Hall of Famer.
Well, first of all, there was a number of standout players on that team, Hall of Famers even, and a lot of borderline Hall of Famers too. But I think the difference between all of those players and Craig was the fact that, boy, when I was there, he played every single day. He didn't want to come out of the lineup. He was mad if he wasn't in the lineup. Actually, I'm not sure if he was ever not in the lineup over the two and a half seasons that I was there. But a guy that came prepared to play every single day and loved playing as well. You know, sometimes that late in your career, you know, you're just kind of not going through the motions, but you might lose a little bit of the passion for it. And I don't think that ever happened with Craig.
Was that all the more impressive because he was near the end of his career? I mean, he's 38 to 40 years old in these seasons that you were with Houston.
Yes, he was definitely older, and it was probably all the more impressive. But the thing about him and a lot of those guys also is they were all about winning. It wasn't just about Craig Biggio playing in the 162 games or Craig Biggio chasing 3,000 hits or some of the milestones. And my goodness, when you look up at his record list and some of the names that are, you know, right next to his name, it is certainly a Hall of Fame list. But he definitely played to win every single day, and I think that's what separates those guys from a lot of the rest.
How much does that rub off?
It does rub off. It absolutely rubs off. It can't help but rub off. When you see this every day, day in and day out, you know, you might be another player who might have a little bit of a sore hamstring or a little bit of a sore shoulder, and you see this guy getting taped up from, you know, ankles to knees to wrists and going out there and performing at an A-plus level night in and night out. I think it has to rub off.
And move positions, too.
That's another impressive thing. You know, this guy was an all-star catcher. He was an all-star second baseman. He played center field. He played left field. He played all those positions, and he played all those positions well, and certainly a guy that was capable of saying, no, listen, I'm fine right here. I'm going to stay at second base, or I'm fine here in left field. But he just did what the team needed him to do in order to win, and that's what it all goes back to. He was all about winning.
Are there stories that epitomize, obviously you've talked about his characteristics, but things that you saw or stories that spoke really to who he was that you recall in your time with him in Houston?
You know, I really think probably the most telling story or the most telling statistic, not a lot of stories because he was all about business, was the fact that, I mean, go back and look at how many times he played 162 games in the season. I don't know the answer to that, but I'm going to bet it was, you probably couldn't count them on one hand, and if it wasn't 162 games, it was 160 or 161 games. I know that he and Jeff Bagwell for a long time there had played 162 games for a couple of consecutive seasons, and that's probably the most telling story if that's a story.
And the World Series season, is there anything that sticks out?
Well, you know what? The World Series season is interesting because those guys had played so long together, and they were so good, and they had never really gotten past, they always had trouble getting past the first round of the playoffs with the really, really good Braves teams. And for them to get there finally, I can remember vividly he and Bagwell standing next to each other in the dugout and, you know, just reveling in what was going on here, whether it was Game 7 at St. Louis or whether it was the game that we won to put us into the World Series in 2005 or the World Series in Chicago. You know, unfortunately, we didn't come out on top in that, but I can just remember the two of them just standing there. It looked like two kids that had just gotten called up to the major leagues. That was really impressive.
And that is Rays pitching coach Jim Hickey. Now time for some national perspective, and joining me right now, someone I enjoy on the radio on Sirius XM. He co-hosts the Power Alley, and that is Mike Farron. Mike, thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, always a pleasure, Neil. I'm looking forward to the next couple of days because I have no idea.
It's certainly hard to guess right now, especially at the American League, where you've got just a handful of teams over 500 and a number of teams trying to figure out who they are.
Yeah, well, and I think that's the one of the major issues, right, is, you know, if you're a team that is just a couple of games under, and let's take the Rays because they're kind of in the perfect position there. You know, if you're looking at the teams ahead of you in the standings, you go, boy, you know, Minnesota is a little bit early. Are they really going to be able to hold on over the next 2 months? At least we've got like 65 games left for them, close to it. Are they going to be able to hold on to that? You know, Houston has been one of the big surprises all year. Here they are, you know, back tied for first in the American League West. Are they going to be able to hold on to that spot? Do we really believe in them? And they certainly got better this week in trading for Kazmir. And so I think that has to cloud the judgment some. I know it would mind if I were sitting in the front office, if I were trying to look at this analytically and go, man, are these guys, can we really project these guys to continue over the course of the rest of the season? And I think that pause, you know, may lead to some inactivity or at least uncertainty as to the route the teams want to go. Because, you know, listen, we've heard a lot about Detroit over the last couple of days, right, with David Price, mm-hmm. whether or not he would be potentially available because he's a free agent, obviously, after the year. But Detroit, if they win today, they're at 500. And if Minnesota loses to the Yankees, and both of these things are things that are possible to happen, are they really going to sell them in 3 games out of a playoff spot? Now, maybe you're not buying because you're probably not going to win the division at this point, but you're close to the wild card, and you don't want to give up too much for a coin flip game. But from their standpoint, I think they have a very difficult time convincing themselves of that. And the same goes for just about every team that's in that mix that's, you know, within a couple of games of 500. Generally, at this point in the season, we'd say, listen, if you're not 500, you're not really a buyer. You're not really a team that you know, is in the mix. But there's only six teams that have winning records in the American League right now, and there is uncertainty with those teams that are at the top of the wild card.
And you mentioned the division versus the wild card, but how many teams are going to look at what Kansas City did last year and say they were 48-50, and not only did they get the second wild card, but they ended up being, what, a moment from winning the World Series?
Yeah, and I think it's an excellent point. And, I wouldn't be surprised if there are teams that feel that way. And that's why I think it's very difficult to make a move. I find the whole idea of punting the season very difficult for most competitors to stomach. And I think that's the case even in, high analytics front office. I think those guys, they want to win. And in the end, you're judged on playoff appearances and really World Series. I mean, heck, Billy Beane's been to the playoffs like 8 times in 17 years, and the A's fans, still get frustrated with them because they haven't won. They've been to the LCS once.
Mm-hmm.
And so I look at it from the standpoint of how do you pull the plug on that when you still have a chance to win? If you're if you're in a position like Oakland is this year, or you have 7 or 8 games under 500, if you're where Boston is now, then it's pretty easy to make that decision. But if you're one hot streak away from getting into it, I guess it is a little bit of a gambler's mentality. But who hasn't been at the craps table and said, I'm on a roll. I'm going to let this run. Or, I'm just one hot streak from getting it all back. And I think I certainly understand that if a team is trying to find a way to get themselves back into the race or back into a playoff position when they're only a game under.
And look, the Royals, again, perfect example last year. They could have traded James Shields at the deadline and said he's going to be a free agent. Instead, they let it ride. And obviously, we know what happened there. And it's really carried over into this year. And Kansas City almost got a Johnny Cueto overnight. Do they make a large move for a starter like Cueto? Do you expect before the deadline? And who, of the other division leaders, what else do you think their biggest needs and wants are right now?
Well, I do think that a starting pitcher is at the forefront for Cincinnati. I mean, for Kansas City. I mean, with Ventura's struggles and now losing Jason Vargas from a year to Tommy John surgery, that's something that they really need. And they have been linked to Cueto for a long period of time. It would not surprise me if they found a way to rework that deal. If it's not him, maybe it's another one of the rental starting pitcher types. Like, if, in fact, Justin March is available on the White Sox with 3 straight in Cleveland, I don't know if that's changed their mindset at all with it, but, certainly from their standpoint, I think it certainly would be something to consider. Because, again, they're one of those teams that's starting to play a little bit better, and they're not that far out of it. Maybe it's more like a Mike Leake, who isn't the sexiest name, but certainly a very good pitcher. If Detroit decided to move, and they were willing to trade in the division, maybe David Price is a name for Kansas City. So I think that's the route that they're likely to go, even though they could use some help in the outfield, too. As far as the other division leaders, Houston's looking at very aggressively at a bat and another power arm, but they will make the best deal possible. They won't rule out a starting pitcher. So they're going to be very active on all fronts. And they paid a pretty healthy price to get Scott Kazmir. Even though those prospects may not have been famous, they're very good ones that they gave up. Mm-hmm. The Angels need some offense, and they really need a left fielder more than anything. Their starting pitching's been surprisingly good this year. And if they could add somebody who can give them some punch from left field, I think that would be certainly well within their plan. And actually, the Yankees, talked to Brian Cashman this week, and he doesn't have much of a stomach for moving some of their near major league ready prospects. They actually have some good ones right now. Aaron Judge, the outfielder, Greg Bird, first baseman, Luis Severino, who really could be up within a couple of weeks and maybe help the Yankees bullpen. So those are all guys that are pretty good that they feel like could really help the big league team within the next couple of years and give them an infusion of youth. And especially with Bird and with Judge eventually looking as everyday players, something that they haven't really had in a while. I think right now they're looking more for complementary pieces. I mean, second base seems to be most of the focus from the fans, but they know that even if they put Steven Drew out there, as much as he struggled offensively, he's going to play a position well defensively. And really, offense hasn't been an issue for the Yankees. So
no.
I wouldn't be surprised if it's more kind of minor pieces for them to fill out their roster.
Well, you take a look at the way they won. They score early because they've scored the most runs in the major leagues in the first inning because they have speed at the top of the lineup, and they shorten the game late because they've got the best 2 back-end relievers in the game.
Yeah, and I think that might be something that they've been linked to. you know, if the Reds were to move Aroldis Chapman, or if the Padres, which I wouldn't be surprised. In fact, I would be more surprised if they didn't move Craig Kimbrell than if they did move Craig Kimbrell at this point. There's been a little bit of talk of the Yankees getting involved in that regard. They don't really need somebody to kind of finish games for them because Nolan Betances has been so good. If you can get a guy who's a pretty good strikeout pitcher to help lengthen that bullpen and take some of the pressure off that starting staff, you know, I really think that that's a route that they could go down. And it seems like most of the buzz is surrounding on that if they're making more significant move. And by significant, I mean adding somebody more famous.
I would think most unique position, you know, you look at teams around 500 right now is Toronto, because they haven't been, to the postseason in so long. And everyone was anticipating they had a really good chance to win after getting Josh Donaldson and Russell Martin. And here they are, you know, kind of hovering around the 500 mark, and they have needs on their pitching staff for sure.
Yeah, I think that the thing is that their needs are pretty easy to identify. I mean, they need starting pitching. And more than anything, they need innings. The one thing is that there's been a lot of focus on their bullpen, especially kind of early in the year, but the rookie Ozuna has done a tremendous job in the ninth inning. But I'll tell you what, you know, for a kid who's just like 21 years old, he sure pitches like he's 31 or 32. He's got a lot of poise, and he's it's really fun watching kids that are drafted out of the Mexican leagues, because at 16 they're facing guys who are two or two and a half times their age. If you're having success there, then you certainly get the sense that they have ice water in their veins. And they're going to get Aaron Sanchez back to help their bullpen at some point, too. So I would think that starting pitcher is the main focus for them. And I'd be interested to see if they're willing to move one of the position players off their roster in an ability to facilitate that. And Edwin Encarnacion is having a little bit of a down year from a batting average standpoint. He's under control for another year. Justin Smoke has played pretty well for them. Gets him in the lineup. Let them rotate some guys through the DH spot because Jose Bautista's had a bad shoulder some. You know, I wonder if that's something that they consider. I mean, there's risk in that, in taking that guy out of the middle of the order, because the top five in that lineup are so, so good. But I would have to think that that's something Toronto's at least considering. And they're a team that had been linked to Cueto, you know, before that near deal with the Royals, and you wonder if now they step up their pursuit of him and knowing that he was nearly dealt to Kansas City.
Well, we'll get the answers in about 5 days. At that point, everything will become a whole lot clearer, at least in terms of who's going where. Mike Farron, thanks for being with us.
Hey, and I can't wait till we have this conversation on August 31st and we see who got through waivers.
Thanks again.
All right, take care.
And that's Mike Farron of SiriusXM, and we certainly thank him and all of our guests on today's program. He followed the Rays all season in 2015 with MLB.com at Bat, the number one app for live baseball. At Bat is up to the moment at any moment with in-game highlights, live look-ins, replay reviews, radio broadcasts, statcast, and more. Get MLB.com at Bat for your smartphone or your tablet. Thanks to all of our guests today, including Mike Farron of SiriusXM, as well as Kevin Kiermaier, Rays outfielder, pitching coach Jim Hickey, team president Brian Ald, Jared Sandberg, manager for the AAA Durham Bulls, and also Brian Anderson from Sun Sports. Certainly enjoyed having each and every one of them on this program. Next week, of course, we'll focus on the trading deadline, which is on Friday. And we'll also give you the chance to get to know Rays pitcher Erasmo Ramirez a little bit better. If you ever have something you'd like to hear on the show, all you have to do is tweet me at Neil Solons. For my producer, Carlos Viteri, I am Neil Solons. Stay tuned. The pregame show is next. You're listening to the Rays Baseball Network.
Thank you for listening to This Week in Rays Baseball.
Driven in the air to center field. Kiermaier going back at the wall, jumps up and makes the catch.
If you missed any of the show, catch it on archive at RaysBaseball.com/radio.
3-2 to Looney is launched in the air, right center field. This one's on its way, and the Rays have tied it up. A homer for James Loney, and it's 5-5.
Keep it right here. The Rays pregame show is next.